So,
welcome everyone to today's tutorial session in programming languages. We had a tutorial sheet, like you see before us here. So, this time it's all about transactional memory. So let's maybe just start right on. Transactional memory that uses pessimistic concurrency control provides opacity. Well, what about this one? True, anyone? Okay. Anyone against that? Okay, one person awake, it seems. Okay, so, actually, that's completely true. Why is that? That's the more interesting question for that. And, pessimistic concurrency control, everyone. That's when the transactional memory system tries to foresee what's gonna happen in the next few instructions, and tries to do something about when a commit is going to happen in the future, or thinks that the conflict is going to happen. So conflicts are always things that that are associated with invalid states. So you interrupt something while there's some manipulations on the valid state going on, and that is something that would destroy the opacity of a system. Opacity was the property that was talking not only about the succeeding transactions, but also on the ones that are gonna be cancelled anyway. These zombies, so to say, and for those. To be created in any way, you need some kind of invalid state. But in a pessimistic concurrency control system, you won't ever reach a faulty state. You will be cancelled before that. So there won't be any situation in which you can have non-opacity, so to say. So there's no transaction ever running on a faulty state. So in that sense, pessimistic concurrency control absolutely provides opacity. That's true. Good. So next thing. Eager conflict detection implies eager version management. What about that? So that once again needs to decipher what a thing like eager version management means. This is about the time that you write your changes to an area where everybody can see it. So there's the idea of having the whole thing eager or lazy. While in the eager version management, you would write all your changes through and keep an undo log. In the lazy version, you would keep your write accesses private in the redo log, and only in the end you would ensure that you get an atomic atomic section during which you would then finally put all the writes that you have in your redo log into the common memory area. So that would be the lazy version management. And now the question is whether eager conflict detection, which means that you would flag or you would recognize that there is a conflict as soon as the first one has actually happened, whether that implies that you also need to write your changes to the common memory as soon as they happen. Well, what do you think now about the question? Is it true? Or false? Well, the thing is, you can at least imagine that eager conflict detection is also a thing that you could just do by comparing redo logs, for example. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to write to the actual memory. So, of course, that would be the obvious one where you you could easily detect conflicts eagerly, but it doesn't have to be. The transactional memory management system for itself can work with, well, whatever insights it needs. So I would say it doesn't necessarily need to be like that. Although it can be, of course. So, next. Conflict occurrence, detection, and resolution happen at once in some transactional memory systems. These systems make use of, and now there's a choice in the concurrency control and a choice in the conflict detection. So, what about a concurrency control? There's a pessimistic and optimistic concurrency control. So, yeah, we have talked about that already a little bit earlier, I think, yeah, in the first question. So it's about the general attitude in the concurrency control. You either optimistically let the things happen and then afterwards try to clean up the mess that they have created, or pessimistically think that everyone will create a mess anyway, so let's try to foresee what they do and repair the things as long as we still have influence on what's going to happen. And if conflict occurrence detection and resolution happen at once in a transactional memory system, well, That doesn't sound like let everything crash and then abort and just retry. That's more of a pessimistic approach in which you actually try to do something with resolution in there. So that seems more like the pessimistic approach. So that would be this one over here. And there's conflict detection, eager, validating, or lazy. Well, if everything happens at once, I would say that's pretty eager. You don't let anything crash in this situation. Good. Next one. A conflict occurs between two threads. A and B, where B accesses memory in a non-transactional way. So we have one thread A and one thread B, and B accesses memory in non-transactional way. So there's just, this one is transaction-free. And A has transactions in there. Transactions of A consist of two statements, S1 and S2. So we have S1 and S2 in there, and they are happening inside a transaction. B has observed the state after A has executed S1, but before A has executed S2. So B is acting non-transactionally, and B somehow can perceive this state between those two. So let's have a look at the options that we're given. A and B will abort. See, head's shaking. Yeah, that, I don't know why. It's just no reason for that. Why should it? Especially B, as B has no transaction anyway, so why? Good. The transactional memory system uses lazy version management. At least I see doubts here. Well, in that case, if it has lazy, or if it had lazy version management, what about perceiving the state between or in the middle of the transaction? The thing is that non-transactional accesses go to the area that everyone can see in memory, particularly not to the redo logs. And with the lazy version management, you would not put all your changes in the main memory as they happen, but instead you would keep your redo log. So it's pretty hard to actually see the state in between several of the instructions there. So nah, that's not gonna happen. The transactional memory does not provide single log atomicity. Case, we would have kind of a global lock on all of the different transactions, and consider the non-transactionals as also separate transactions from that, so that you wouldn't have a possibility to interfere while the other transaction was still running. So, well, that seems pretty reasonable. Transactional memory does not provide transactional sequential consistency. Well, that's something which for which the setting isn't just you can't see it from the outside of a transaction like that. So the transactional sequential consistency is something that for which you would need a different setup of an example. You would need to compare whether there's writes and reads that cannot be that are kind of executed before each other during the same transaction, which you can't see from outside. So that is something for which just the setup isn't really ideal, or it's not even possible to see that from that. So that doesn't make sense in that sense. Okay. A zombie transaction crashes the whole program due to reading unexpected and inconsistent values. The transaction memory implementation provides opacity, uses pessimistic concurrency control, or uses eager version management. By now we've mentioned those terms already several times. So, zombie transaction is in there. Zombie transactions and opacity. Well, that's exactly what the opacity is about. In a system that provides opacity, even the failing transactions would not be able to perceive these inconsistent values. So, I would say it doesn't make sense. Uses pessimistic concurrency control. Once again, the pessimistic one would abort as soon as some conflict is actually going to happen, or do something about that. So that's not what's happening here. Something is running uncontrolled. So that's not it. Uses eager version management. That seems plausible for inconsistent values to be perceived in any way, to be observable. You need to write them through to the main memory. So eager version management is probably the thing that's happening here in the transaction memory system. Good. 6. Transaction memory implementation detects a conflict in the middle of a transaction, although the actual write that created the conflict lies in the past. This kind of conflict detection is called eager, tentative, validation conflict detection, or lazy conflict detection. Well, it certainly isn't eager. Is it? If it is referring to something which lies way in the past, that's not the definition of eager. Tentative is about potential conflicts, which is also not what's happening here. Validation conflict detection is a conflict detection system that works with kind of intervals after which the transaction memory system actually checks whether there has been a conflict or not. Well, that doesn't sound too bad, does it? Yeah, that one should have been green. Lazy conflict detection. Well, lazy conflict detection is something that does not happen in the middle of a transaction, but in the very end, so that's probably not it. Good. Transactional memory implementation uses optimistic concurrency control. Which of the following statements must be false? Okay, tricky one. Because a transaction is a zombie, the program crashes after a while through a pointer that is null. Optimistic concurrency control is one where you let the transaction work, and only in the end, if you notice that there has been a conflict, you do something about that. Well, that is a possibility, isn't it? That you, the program crashes because you have read an inconsistent pointer. But it doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to happen. And yeah, that's the trick with the false here. In principle, that is something that can happen. So there exists transaction that may just see these behavior, but it's not definitely going to be so. So we can't check this one. So I'm reluctantly crossing this one out. But yeah, it's not happening all the time. The implementation checks for conflicts only when committing. Yeah, that's once again conflict detection. Yeah, and for something like that to be observable, you don't necessarily have to check for conflicts in the end, although that is a possibility, but it's not the only way to realize that. There's still this this approach of having this validations now and then, and yeah, that means that that is not the only way to realize that. Once again, the false is the major thing to keep attention to here. A transaction can be suspended until a conflict a conflicting transaction has finished. Well. What can I say? That's just not true in that sense. It doesn't have anything that backs that up. Okay. So now to more hands-on things here. Now we're talking about one of the things that we have seen as implementations for transactional memory in the lecture, particularly the restricted transactional memory approach. That is the one with the cache lines and the register backup facilities and all that. So here you're going to see certain instructions that came new to the systems, like these xbegin and xend things. And those are the ones that are related to the restricted transactional memory approach. So, first of all, to get you a little bit started into what the algorithm that you see here is all about, there's a few questions about what these things will actually be like when they're executed. So, yeah, what do we see here? We have two threads once again, and the first one has a transactional memory section, where there's the critical section over here. And they have the transactions started here and ended here. What's happening is that the result value of the xbegin is stored into a variable, and this is checked now whether the transaction has successfully started. And in case it has successfully started, the if branch is executed, or tries to be executed with the transaction, and if it reaches xn, then everything will be fine. In that case, we will go from here to there, and we will just check whether s is in the state that that tells us the transaction has successfully started. If it's still in that state, then we know that the transaction has gone through because control has once again reached that point and the variable is still considered to be the status code transaction has started. So in that case, we can exit the program over that. In case that the transaction has aborted somewhere in between, what's going to happen is that from that abort in there, control is going back there, so to say. So the instruction pointer is resetted to that, and the S value is now in the state that it has been before the transaction had started. So it hasn't been assigned to -1, but instead what it has been before. So it's still 0 at that point. So in that case, we will not branch into the body of the if, but instead pass it, go here, and back to the start. Well, we once again check the variable s, and that's still 0. So we have to reiterate. So control is going back there once again. Well, we try to start a new transaction, and the whole thing loops. Okay, is there questions on how that works? Good, fine. So that is kind of a technique of a kind of an ever-trying approach without any fallback solution. That's only if you really trust your system that you have enough resources left to actually perform your transaction. If it turns out that is happening, for example, inside a very large transaction that exceeds all the available cash lines, then you can imagine that thing just gonna run forever in a loop. So there's no fallback path given for that. The other thread is working pretty similar. So we also have a critical section that does actually the same. We also have the frame with the X begin and the X end, only that in this case here we have the recurring execution of the transactional block. Instead, we have a kind of a backup solution, a fallback path. When the transaction fails in the first time, it will immediately go over here and do a non-transactional access to the data. So, of course, that is something that's bound to give us a little headache in terms of, well, the second part of the thread P1 is potentially executing non-transactionally and doesn't even do anything like locking in order to prevent effects from happening. So it's not so clear what the outcome of the computation is that's carried out in there. So originally there's a data that's 0, and then there's increments happening on there. So the question is now, what's going to happen? And that's what we will be asked here. So here we have the options. These three options, and it's important to actually understand what they say, because that's the only options that you have for the gaps over here. So will is a definite statement. So it will in all cases. Does that mean? And there's a will not, which means that will definitely not be something. So these are very restrictive things. And then there's the may or may not thing, which is the, well, can be like that, but there's also other possibilities. But some of them may be like that. So these are the statements that you can put in there. So, let's see what we have here. We have after P0 and P1 both terminate, so both of them somehow reach their respective endpoints. Data evaluate to 1. What do you say? Is there a path through the whole system where data evaluates to 1? For that to happen, there needs to be certain things. Well, in principle, both of the threads try to perform their increment operation once. So you might be tempted to say that at least the desired outcome of the programmer was that data is 2 after the execution of that. Since both of them try to finish with having data executed once, for one to be the valid data value, you need a race to happen. So do you see a possibility for that in there? Well, could imagine, for example, that there is two of the threads starting. Thread 0 kicks the transaction of thread 1 in the behind, and it's gonna start its non-transactional part, where it just reads the value 0 from data, where which will maybe reset thread P0, whatever, we don't actually know. But after it has read, we can imagine that thread P0 tries to execute and maybe succeeds in ending its transaction. And while the other thread, then after the transaction has ended, may finish with writing to the memory, and then you've got your conflict, your race in there, and they might overtake. So in this case, well, you could imagine that there is some kind of race happening here. So may or may not is probably the idea. So next one, after P0 P0 and P1 both have terminated, data evaluates to 3. Do you see a way for that to happen? No? There exists no path through the system where you can create 3? Actually, that was the question that should trick people who haven't understood when this loop actually terminates. So that's the only way that you can get more than 2 increments in the system, and that would be during a loop somehow. But the loop is terminated as soon as its body has executed the transaction once successfully. Good. So let's continue with the next thing. So that is now the details of what's going to happen in one particular execution of the system, and we are given the interleaving of the instructions here. So we have the sequence for P0, and we have clearly given how these are meant to be intersected. So let's draw a diagram for that. That explains this kind of intersection. Here we have a few memory lines there, and have initial cache states for that. So let's start with them. Cache states for S and data are given. S and data, like that, and their initial states are shared 0. So, no transaction active yet, and caches have shared information so far. Good. So, let the instructions begin. We have P0s, check for the value of S. Well, there's a minus involved, so this one here. What's that gonna do? We don't have any invalidation buffers and store buffers in that example here. That might happen, that we decide that we don't model them because we consider them to be immediately firing their changes to the respective cache lines or to their others. So that's a design choice, and I think that's probably something that I should have put on the as precondition on the things, but anyway, we're now just considering something like that. So we issue the check for that, and that's gonna hit the cache line for S. It's locally active, locally available, so we can just answer this one directly. That was the loop guard, I think, for the first, for thread 0. Then, what's happening next is this S is the transaction begin. Well, that is really tedious to write so small on the screen, so I will just do it like that. Yeah, that's due to this darn pen. Okay, but you know what I mean with that. So we have the starting event over here. And this time, what's going to happen is we will, first of all, execute the xbegin, which will result in something like switching the CPU into transactional mode. I just mark it like this over here, but I don't have some... Well, I could, for example, add another line where I would keep book on the transactional mode or the CPU, but I think that's a line that just has two changes, and that's a little bit too much. It doesn't need to be like that. So the transaction starts like this. And what's going to happen is now we will consider the to write to S. So we first, oh, black was the one. We first have a look at what the value in cache line S is, and yeah, it is a shared line. So writing to a shared line means that I have to invalidate. So there's an invalidation happening here. Which will be answered with an acknowledgement. And my cache lines will have a different state. This one is now invalid. This now is for a short period of time exclusive, but it's going to be written to immediately. So we'll have the value of the of S written into. The colors. We will then immediately check for whether the whole thing is has been minus one or not, but that's quite a lot of detail already. So, but that's what's happening there. Then there's the change in the state. That's now transactional. So there's a T added to the state. Is it? Oops. Oh, yeah. Pretty small. But in principle, you would mark the transactional bit on the line here to signify that this has been modified, or maybe also read, but in this time only modified in the transaction. Then it's modified by itself, so it needs to have an M, and the new value is minus one. So it's TM minus 1. Then we read it once again, but that doesn't change anything on the state. Good. So then what needs to be executed is... So we have done this one, Now let's do this one. So we have xbegin minus 1. So that's the guard for the branch instruction. This one, well, it is an event, but it doesn't touch any variables. So the only thing that that does is it will make the second thread enter, or the second CPU enter transaction mode. Good. So, now, this one. That's, once again, third P0. So, we have data plus plus. So, yeah, for this one, there's actually a read and a write part. We have to read data and we have to write to data. So there's kind of three events happening. Before execution, after execution of the read, but before execution of the write, and then after execution of the write. That's why I have three of the events for this one. Yeah, and so first of all, we have to read. So we need to read to data. Let's share, so this will immediately return. And then we're gonna write to this. So for that, we'll also... we will also contact this one. But now we realize that this is shared, and thus we should probably issue an invalidation on the other side. So let's do that. On the data part, that's here. This will answer, act like this. So we have env and env ack. Now the states have changed. We have invalid over here, and this is now transaction modified. And it has been 0 before, so it will be 1. So it's TM1 over here. Good. So the next thing that's bound to happen is this one. So you want to read from data, which is invalid now. So what we're going to do is we will perform a read request. That now reaches the cache of P0, and read request is happening to a line that is marked with transactional and modified. That's a big no-no. We don't want to have something like that. So here we detect that there is a conflict happening. So here we have the conflict. And that's going to have implications because we are in transactional mode, and we will thus have to do something about the all the cache lines that are marked as transactional. So this one, as well as the own one, will change their state. It will be now invalid. And the transaction mode stays the same. And the instruction pointer of the whole thing is also somehow reset to the value that when the transaction started, and that's why you see that this one is the next to be executed for thread P0. Yeah, so we have hit a conflict here. So this P0 can't answer what the actual read value of the whole thing should be, because it didn't doesn't have the most recent it has kind of temporarily locally modified already, and thus the value that it keeps here is kind of the value for the redo log. So that is something which is not appropriate for answering. The question is now who answers. So we're not in an isolated system here. Instead, we have other components that are also part of the whole thing. So either there is another core that still has a shared version of that. I doubt that that is the case, because we have some other invalidations of those things going on before. So probably it's the RAM. So yeah. So we'll have main memory. Memory, that is the one that will probably in the end answer the read request. So this one also gets, this is now multi-edge or something, I don't know. But in principle, we get something like this, where there's a read response, and then there's an invalidation going out there, which will, well, probably not trigger the memory, so there's not so much to work here. I think it does. Well, probably the thing is, if the answer comes from the main memory, then we will realize. Oh, darn it! So it's just a read, and a read response is RR, sorry. Yeah, if the read response comes from memory, then we will assume that we have exclusively or an exclusive view on the whole thing. So this will be exclusively zero. And we can go on here with modifying the exclusive value is pretty locally. So we will have modified one as the value over here. So that is the increment. Then let's do with this one over here. Minus one. Now that everything is invalid, we need to do a little bit about getting the value? And in that case, what's going to happen is we will realize it's invalid, so we will issue a read message. This will be responded by memory. So we will have exclusively zero in there. Next one. This one here. Yeah, that's the large one. Yeah, so there's a large bracket and the minus one. So for what a mess. It should have gone to S and not to the other one. Like this. And of course the state is also for the other one. Exclusively zero. So we're still in transactional mode. Oh yeah, are we actually? No, we haven't been. So now we are that we do that. So we have transactional mode here. So this kind of canceled the transactional mode. This thing. So now we are once again in the transactional mode. We start that thing, and what we do is we write in there. And since it is exclusive, we can just write directly there, and the new state is part of a transaction, modified, and minus one. Here, then space is running out. Data plus plus. It's this one here. So plus. That needs to contact the line for D. That is invalid. So what we do is we issue a read request, which will reach a whole lot of different participants. Goes to the D part, so it also it's this one, so it's a read. Contact this one and this one. No. By the way, that should have been a transactional thing. And now that we reach a line in P1's cache that is marked as being part of transactions and got modified in the past and gets a read once again, this will lead to a conflict here, and Yeah, it will become invalid now and cancels out the transaction. And the answer will be coming from the main memory, like that, instead. And we come to transactional exclusive zero, which we can give back. Here there will be a modification coming because we are in exclusive state. We can just perform transactional modified one. And now finally we have to work on this one. So we have xend, and all xend does is, of course, it ends the transaction mode. And also what does it do? It will contact all the lines that have transaction as their bit, as their marker, and clear that. And now nobody will be able to read that. It's modified minus one and modified one now in the end. Yeah. I think modified one and modified minus one.
That was thing. Questions about that? Okay. So now for the last one, number four. Fix the program such that 2 is the only value that data may evaluate to after terminating after termination of both threads. Yeah, of course, without just writing 2 in them. Yeah.
Question before: when does it write back to memory the transactions, these threads? Because the only thing I saw was that they read from memory, but they never write back. And I thought when they end the transaction, then they commit the changes.
Well, now it's a valid cache state, but as soon as someone else issues a read to the locally modified cache line, the answer will not be a read response, but a write back, and then it's written back to the memory. So it's not that we will immediately see the result in the main memory, but it would be considered a valid response for other read requests.
Okay, so for future read requests after the...
Yeah. And with that you kind of don't see a large difference in the effect, as read responses will be answered either by memory or by peers. Yeah, so much for theory. Now you might wonder if I bring something like store buffers into play. Well, yeah, after the execution of a transaction, you also require the store buffer to be carried out in terms of being emptied until every member of the transaction is. I don't even know whether in reality the store buffer is deactivated or something during transactions. I don't know. Can be, because it doesn't need to But if there's conflicts happening anyway, then the whole transaction is reverted. So it may be that they are then disabled or something. But that's so much into the details of the hardware that I simply don't know. Okay. Good. So, the thing is, how can we restore the original intention that I now just announce here? That the original extension was that if you execute them both in parallel, the end result should be just two instead of possibly one. So, yeah, in principle, what you need to do here is, how can I make the whole program here transactionally safe, so to say? And the thing is that means we have to do something about this non-transactional area here, so that communication between this one and other transactions doesn't do random stuff. So, what could you do? Well, how can we make that into something like a critical section? Well, there's several things that you can do here. For example,
I would put a mutex around it.
That is one of the possibilities, yes. And I think that's also the one that I originally intended to be there, but turns out that you can do several of these. That's always, if you put something like that into exams, you'll get surprised how many solutions there actually are. So you can do something like a wait and signal around that with a mutex, which would be in principle fine. However, remember that there's still the collaboration between transactional memory and that's actually the point. So you need P0 and not P1 to be the one with them. No, you already said P0, so that was fine. But just wanted to stress that. That is an important part. So you need to add that to the thing and check for the mutex to be available. And if it's not available, you need to abort. So that's just kind of copying the implementation of this mutex and transaction compatibility thing from the implementation of the hardware transactional memory thing in the slides. So that's nothing too fancy. It's just the solution that we already had. So that would be a solution. I would be quite fine with that, but turns out that there's also others. You can, for example, remove the part down there completely and instead install the same thing as this over there with a while loop and have kind of parallel two while loops. Yeah, you need something like this then, and you need some S prime or something that is gonna be checked for the right value, and you also need to assign the value of X begin to S prime, something like that. With that, you kind of mirroring the thread P0, so that would be also a solution. Good. So much for that.
Yeah. That is a lengthy exercise or lengthy tutorial thing. And as we only have finished with transactional memory in the last lecture anyway, I would say let's do that next week. I think an hour should be sufficient, so let's start a tutorial not on 8:30 but on 9 o'clock next week. So 1 hour should be plenty for that. But quarter of an hour is just won't gonna cut it. So let's stop here and continue next week on 9 o'clock with 5.3. And yeah, apart from that, I think I'm done for today. So let's say.